I am dead inside.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly episode 36, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into the dumpster fire that was the Giants offense on Sunday night, we got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, guys, subscribe. It helps the show grow. Subscribe, we're on iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom, and Stitcher Radio. Subscribe. Then go follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. You can follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. And if you were lucky enough to get into the NYG Weekly Fantasy League, make sure to check your teams because I wiped the floor with you, DJ. I wiped the floor. I want to know, Weiss, I saw you lost this week. I'm sure you'll bounce back. So everyone remember, go check your rosters, set them. It's going to be a fun season. All right. Weiss, this episode, I think, is going to be really interesting. I promised the listeners I was going to go scorched earth, and I'm sure I will. I sort of want to hand it to you first because there is just way too many directions that I can go with this. But before I do that, what I want to do is just say this. For you Twitter dummies out there who are incapable of blaming multiple parties, it can be multiple people's fault.
It is multiple people's fault.
Does Jerry Reese suck at drafting offensive line? Yes. Was Ben McAdoo's play calling abysmal? Absolutely. Did Eli Manning play poorly? Yes. All three of those things contributed to the dumpster fire that we witnessed on Sunday night. Weiss.
Yes, sir.
First of all, how are you? I sort of just went right into the thing. I always ask how you are. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay.
I was not looking forward to doing this.
Yeah. Me neither.
I like hearing from you, you know, once a week and talking to you.
But oh, you hear from me more than once a week. Come on.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, doing this thing, I like doing this. But man, I was not looking forward to this at all. I'm not surprised. I don't think anyone's really surprised. I mean, are you surprised?
Yes.
You are surprised.
I'm surprised. I'll tell you why. I didn't expect this offense to go from what it was last year to all of a sudden being this perfectly oiled machine, especially without Odell Beckham. And, okay, I guess this is where we're going to dive right into Ben McAdoo and his stubbornness and the fact that this man needs to give up his play-calling duties because he is incapable of handling both the head coaching duties and the play-calling duties. You had months. You had months of knowing what your offensive line was going to be. You had months of knowing that Brandon Marshall was going to be, at worst, your wide receiver too. You knew you had Sterling Shepard going into his second year. You knew Evan Engram's strengths going into this season.
You also knew for about 2.5 weeks that there was a good possibility that Odell Beckham Jr. might not play week one.
Exactly. And to roll out there with that game plan of dinks and dunks and Eli Manning averaging like 7.5 yards per target, when we well know, and Ben McAdoo said it, he said it last week, who's in the Cowboys secondary? They took 2 shots longer than 15 yards the entire game. That's embarrassing, especially when you have Brandon Marshall, Evan Engram, and Sterling Shepard on that offense. You have Evan Engram, the 4-4-40, 220-pound beast, who was brought in here to bust open the middle of a defense. You have him running Will Tye routes. What in God's name was the game plan? I would love to know, Ben, because you have a weak secondary, a weak defensive line. By the way, I believe they only sent more than 4 rushers 2 or 3 times the entire game and embarrassed the Giants' offensive line. We'll get to the offensive line. We will, I promise. And your game plan was to go underneath where Sean Lee and Jalen Smith are playing? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Embarrassing.
Well, for starters, I'm not surprised because if you've heard me on this podcast throughout the summer, the one thing that I've said is I'm worried. I'm worried about this offensive line. And although I did say that I think they'll be a little bit better in pass protection, I fooled myself. I fell into that trap. This offensive line is a disaster. It is a joke. And what makes it frustrating, what makes it what makes this issue such a so much bigger than just flat out they stink and we need to fix it, is that we're going on year three of this experiment. Mm-hmm. and it's not working. And it's what's the magic term that we use? Blind hope. And that's what this is. This is blind hope from a general manager who has sort of put all of his marbles into a number nine overall pick who has not given that return investment. He has, and this is what's even more mind-boggling for me is, okay, I know I don't want to jump into the offensive line issue, but I just have to say this. We didn't, and you might not agree with me, but not giving up on Ereck Flowers, I don't blame them on that. He's a number nine pick. You really liked him. You drafted him. Fine. We can debate that. But you can't tell me that there was nobody better than John Jerry and Bobby Hart. We didn't invest that much into them to not sort of bring in competition. The only competition we brought in was DJ Fluker, and he was inactive. It just seems to me that Ben McAdoo, and I'm going to go into Ben McAdoo, it just seems to me that McAdoo has this philosophy that I'm smarter than you, and what you think is the problem is not really the problem. And you know what, Ben, you might be smarter than us when it comes to coaching. I hope you are. But our eyes don't lie. You see what we see. You have a 36-year-old quarterback who, listen, he did not play well. He missed some throws, including one to Brandon Marshall.
A wide-open Brandon Marshall.
That could have gone.
He'd still be running.
Yeah, 30, 40 yards, maybe a touchdown. He missed one to Evan Engram down the seam, which, oh, by the way, isn't that why we bought Evan Engram in here, to sort of attack the middle of the field?
And then he didn't hit Sterling Shepard in stride, which, by the way, Chris Collinsworth was like jizzing his pants over Sean Lee's coverage on that when it was just a clearly misthrown ball by Eli.
Yeah, and it's there's so much blame to go around, but to sit here and say that, I don't know how you can be surprised. I'm not surprised at all. I'm watching this thing unfold, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, we're going to get it going here. Here comes the drive. But we just never got it going. And if we're sitting here and saying the same thing that we've said the all last year, and saying, okay, when will the offensive line put together a 60-minute game? When will the offensive line be just adequate for? We talked about it, you and I. We said all they have to do is be adequate, and guess what? This team will be able to move the football. You and I both picked them to win last week, even knowing that there's a good chance that Odell might not play. But it just seems like we're still on the same boat that we were last season, and that is our offensive line stinks. We can't run the football, and basically our only hope is that Odell bails us out with his magnificent talent. And for Ben McAdoo, that's what his offense is. And it begs the question, is this guy actually the reason why that Eli Manning's had those two great years, or was it because Odell Beckham came into the picture? And it's just, it makes you question Ben McAdoo, because this is year two in his offense. And so far, it's only week one, I know, but this is what, the 18th game where Ben McAdoo has been the head coach, and the offense has yet to really put together a full 60-minute game. We're walking away thinking to ourselves, wow, this guy actually, you know, could be an offensive genius, as he's been made out to be prematurely, in my opinion.
And that's the thing that's most frustrating, is this man was brought in here to be an offensive genius. You said it, 18 games in the Ben McAdoo era, the Giants have scored under 20 points 11 times, and they haven't scored over 20 points in their last 7 games. So this offense has been stagnant for a while. And I know you're saying, like, you don't know why I was surprised. Let me tell you why I was surprised. It's because a guy who gets paid a lot of money to know football better than me, he's in charge of this Giants football team. He knew the deficiency of this team was the offensive line. We'll get into Jerry Reese in a little bit, because we have to. Okay. Yeah, right now we're getting into McAdoo. We'll get into Jerry Reese. We'll get into Eli Manning. This man had an entire offseason to game plan around this deficiency, the offensive line. Granted, They didn't get better. You have so many weapons. If your system cannot be schemed to make up for one weak area, granted it's a big area, but we've seen a Giants offense perform even though the offensive line stinks. If your offensive system cannot be adjusted around this bad offensive line, it's a shitty system, Ben. It's not good. It's not going to work. So something needs to change. Now, he's the head coach. He's going to be calling plays. And do you remember a few years ago when we were essentially begging Tom Coughlin to hand over all the play calling duties? And it took a while. Now, what? Ben McAdoo, the head coach, is going to say, admit, hey, what I'm doing isn't working. Here you go, Mike Sullivan. That's not going to happen. If someone takes the play calling duties away from Ben McAdoo, it needs to be Jerry Reese. And I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I don't think Ben McAdoo will let play calling go. I just don't see it. I know people are calling for it, but unless, and I don't even think Jerry would come down. I think it would have to be John Mara and ownership that comes to Ben McAdoo and says, look, this is not working. All right, it's not working, and you need to hand over play calling duties. And I know McAdoo comes from the Mike McCarthy tree and the Andy Reid tree, where they're all like, they have this mindset of running their own ship and doing it the way they're doing it. But it's like, look, it's not working. It's not working. It's so predictable, and I know we can sit here, we can blame the offensive line. They do deserve a lot of blame. But like you talk about, it's their weakness, specifically the two tackles, right? There's a lot of teams with bad offensive lines in this league, but they find a way to scheme around it. Minnesota did it yesterday.
Exactly.
A lot of people are praising Minnesota's offensive line, but they really didn't play that well. Now they did a good job scheming around it, and Sam Bradford was able to make some good throws. But
look at the receiving core. Look at the receiving core that Sammy Sleeves over there is doing it with. Thielen and Diggs, undrafted and a fifth-round pick.
Thielen and Diggs. Take away Odell Beckham. Let's just look at the Giants' receiving core last year. They have Brandon Marshall, who's been a number one receiver all of his career. Granted, he is a little older now. They have Sterling Shepard, a number two receiver, one of the best slot receivers in the NFL.
Second-round pick.
They have Roger Lewis, an undrafted guy, showed some promise last season. But for the most part...
And then Evan Engram, first-round pick.
Yeah, and then Evan Engram, and then I'll even add on Shane Vereen, add on Paul Perk. They have the weapons there where it's, if you take away Odell Beckham, it's still a fairly decent receiving core that could make plays if asked upon. So you look at it and talk about Shane Vereen. Shane Vereen was on the field 31 times, played 31 snaps. Guess how many times they ran a ball with Shane Vereen on the field?
Zero. Predictable.
I bet after snap, 15 or 16, I think, Rob Marinelli sitting on that sideline saying, hey, every time Vereen's on the field, they're probably throwing the ball. And they did. So predictability, lack of adjustments, and not able to hide your weaknesses is what's costing this team. And what's scary about this is this was probably the weakest defensive line they'll face all season.
Can you imagine what this is going to be like when they have to face Von Miller, Justin Houston? It's going to be a bloodbath.
They play Philly in a couple weeks.
If Eli Manning is going to be lucky if he survives this season in one piece. I said it in the preseason. I'm sorry. I'm going to knock on wood again as I say it again. This could be the season where we finally see the Iron Manning go down with an injury.
I mean, he took some shots and... it's not good. There's just so much wrong with it. And another thing, Orleans Darkwa gives you a good 12-yard run, and I think it was the beginning of the third quarter or the end of the second quarter, but it was almost like a quarter until we saw him again. And it's like, what else does Orleans Darkwa have to do to show McAdoo that, he deserves more? Like at what point, like you and I sit up here, we see Orleans Darkwa have a good preseason. We see him have a good couple of carries. And then we come on the show and we're like, you know what? He deserves more. He deserves more. He deserves more. And it just never happens.
Yep.
So it's like, what is the plan here? It just seems like McAdoo is fixated on certain people starting and he's saying to himself, these are the guys that are starting. And Orleans Darkwa, thank you for your 10-yard run. I'll let you know when I need you again. And it's really, really worrisome to me because I'm walking away from this. Like when you listen to Ben McAdoo after that game, not once did he say, you know what? I have to do a better job. I heard Eli say it. I heard Eli go up
there and say, Eli says it every loss.
It's on me. But I haven't heard Ben McAdoo said, yeah, I'm not doing a good job.
You know who did take the blame a lot? Tom Coughlin.
He did. And listen, you know, McAdoo will go up there and he'll talk about execution. We got to execute better. We got to prepare better. But it's like, who's that on? That's on you. It's on you to prepare these guys. And if your scheme is not working, if your game plan is not working, then, you know, that's on you. Because, look, we can't point the finger at Will Tye anymore. We can't point the finger at Larry Donnell anymore. We can't point the finger at Ruben Randall anymore. There are new weapons here, but it just seems like we're sitting here and they can't figure out a way to hide their weaknesses, and it is costing this team. This was a big game that the Giants lost. They are now 0-1 and basically 0-2 if you factor in the way division games work.
Yep.
You know, so they're, I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think their season is on the line on Monday night against the Lions. And we'll talk about that game later.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to go ahead and put that out there right now.
So you brought up a bunch of good points that I want to talk about. The first is, you know, I sort of drew the comparison to Tom Coughlin just now, but you brought up how Ben McAdoo never really says, it's on me, it's on me, it's on me. If you go back and you listen to, I think, some of the first podcasts that we did, and we discussed the Tom Coughlin era, one of the biggest points that I brought up, it was the lack of discipline. He was like this disciplinarian, but this team, the defense was horrendous. The guys were taking penalties left and right, both on the offense and the defense. And at the end of the day, I made the argument that that's a reflection on the coach. This is absolutely a reflection on the coach. If he comes out and says, you know, there were offensive breakdowns all over the place, whose fault is that, Ben? You're the guy in charge of getting them prepared every goddamn week. So at the end of the day, Ben, you got to do better.
If the offensive, if McAdoo thinks that the offensive coordinator, he doesn't trust the coordinator or doesn't think he can call the plays, then how about we get some, like, why don't we get someone in here that you trust, Ben, that you want here, that's not here because he's familiar with the quarterback? Why don't we get someone that you know? Why don't we get one of your friends or your neighbors or your cousins? Why don't you get somebody in here that can do what you want him to do? It is getting to the point with Ben McAdoo, and this is the scary part about it, is that I don't think Ben McAdoo thinks it's his fault.
Yeah, you're right. That's a terrifying thing. And you brought up the Vikings earlier. There are teams around the league doing way more with way less than what the Giants have. And the Vikings are the perfect example.
Even on the offensive line. I know people will say that the Giant offensive line was really bad. It is really bad. But there are worse out there that are doing better to disguise it.
I mean, listen, the Saints aren't world beaters, but the Vikings and the Giants are very similar. They have a totally shit offensive line, good defense, and you can make the argument the Vikings, you don't even have to make the argument, the Vikings have worse offensive weapons than the Giants, in theory, and they make it work. They scheme around it. Strong defense, they make the offensive line work. The offensive line that they trotted out last night, and someone can tweet at me and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe that those five played a single snap together the entire preseason, because they were changing it up. They were finding the combination that worked. All we've seen so far, DJ Fluker is inactive, like you mentioned before. Ridiculous. He can't possibly be worse than John Jerry.
What is he doing here? What's the point of having DJ Fluker on the roster if he's inactive, he's not even able to suit up?
It makes no sense. Let's talk specifically offensive line.
Yes.
Before we get, because I feel like it naturally transitions into Jerry Reese. Mm-hmm. The offensive line. They're just, first of all, egg in the face to anyone who was tweeting at me telling me that Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers looked good in the preseason, because I told you it wasn't going to last. And I said, you know what? Fine. Prove it to me in the regular season. You know what they proved? That Bobby Hart needs to get drug tested after saying he was the best right tackle in the league and that Eric Flowers hasn't improved at all. I think Eric Flowers graded out like 53.5. Horrendous. This line is such a liability, it boggles the mind. And when you think about the weapons that they have, the players that they have the option to trot out there, Justin Pugh, first round pick. Weston Richburg,
hey, what are you doing?
Second round pick. DJ Fluker, inactive, former first round pick. They have guys. They high draft pick guys. Guys that were high value at one point. It's Jerry Reese. It's Ben McAdoo. It's even on Solari. something's got to give. Because you can even look at the two best pieces of the line who probably escape a lot of criticism because of the shit pieces that surround them. Weston Richburg's regression, it's still going on. I mean, he's playing like decent football, but he's not nearly the center that we saw 2 years ago. And then Justin Pugh was basically drafted and was like, okay, you know what? You're not good enough to be a right tackle. We're going to kick you inside. And he's been serviceable. And you know what? Both of those guys, if the Giants don't re-sign them, they're going to get big money elsewhere, but they're far from like incredibly valuable guys.
They're Pro Bowl caliber players.
They haven't made a Pro Bowl. Neither of them are Pro Bowl or All Pro. Jerry Reese has been drafting good. 11 years. 11 years he hasn't drafted an All Pro or a Pro Bowl offensive lineman. The last time the Giants had an offensive line that was, I would say, together and good and cohesive were the last of Acorsi's guys before they got old and injured, which was the 07 run, pretty much. This line is garbage. He made zero effort. And listen, you can say there wasn't that much talent in the draft, and I was naive in thinking that Ben McAdoo would be able to scheme around it and that Evan Engram would tremendously help this offense, which, listen, only week one, only his first game, it didn't even look like McAdoo was trying to utilize Engram. But maybe instead of spending the money on Marshall, you make a few Make a few cuts, save some cap space. Maybe you bring in a 36-year-old Andrew Whitworth. Maybe you bite the bullet and bring in a Ricky Wagner. You're just trotting the same guys out there. We knew what Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers were. They weren't going to take this magical step all of a sudden. So to me, it's a stubbornness, and we've seen that all throughout the Giants organization. Call it stubbornness, call it loyalty to a fault. From John Mara all the way down to Coughlin to now Ben McAdoo, it's either a stubbornness or a loyalty to a fault or an unwillingness to admit that they're wrong. And I thought that, you know, getting rid of guys like Jeremy Davis last year, or, you know, not putting Biz on the 53 and moving him to the practice squad and risking him getting taken by someone else was sort of a sign that maybe Jerry Reese's mentality was changing and he was willing to sort of admit when he had made a mistake on a draft pick. Obviously not the case. I agree with your sentiment earlier about keeping Flowers around because, you know, listen, he's a first-round left tackle. You have him under contract for another year. You might as well keep him. But to not even bring in other legitimate competition, it's absolutely mind-boggling to me. I'll let you speak now. It's disgusting. It really is.
Yeah, I think, listen, the blame falls at the feet of Jerry Reese in this whole ordeal. You know, we give him credit on the defensive side of the ball, but, you know, you talked about Andrew Whitworth. I don't think that was the move. I think what is hurting this team was 2 years ago when they had the opportunity at Russell Okun, they had the opportunity at Donald Penn, and the one guy that I think that they should have been more aggressive on, and people will say, well, he was not leaving Oakland, but I think if they were really aggressive at Donald Penn and they really made a great
sense. They had him in the building at one point.
They had him on the way to the building. They had Okun on the way, Donald Penn on his way to the building. If they were really aggressive at that, I think that would have been the smart move because he's been great in Oakland. You know, I just think that when you look at it, we'll table Flowers. That's a whole different discussion. But just on the right side, let's just focus on the right side.
Sure.
You have John Jerry, who is on the wrong side of 30, who
somehow got a 3-year extension.
At his best, is an average offensive guard. And that's me being nice. He's an average offensive guard. You have Bobby Hart, who doesn't seem to be a smart guy because he's making outrageous comments and saying he's the best right tackle. I don't even want to talk about that. But you make that type of comment, and then you go out and have that kind of a performance. But he was a 7th-round pick. So you have a journeyman offensive guard in John Jerry, who is at best average, and you have a 7th-round pick, Bobby Hart, who is to put it nicely, at his best been a below average offensive tackle. And you're telling me that the last 2 years there was nobody better than that? There was nobody you could have taken a chance on? I'm not even talking about the Ricky Wagners and the Andrew Whitworth. I'm not even talking about that. I'm not saying there wasn't anybody out there that you could bring in to just compete with these guys.
It's mind-boggling. It's not even Weiss. It got to the point where we weren't even asking for us. Like we weren't even okay. Well, we were obviously asking for Joe Thomas, but realistically, all we wanted was competition.
That's it. Look, just if you brought in some adequate competition, and they just pushed those guys, and you say, you know what, let's have an open competition and see who comes out of it. I would have been okay with it.
And you know what they did? They did the opposite. It was Ben McAdoo coming out after camp and practice saying, oh, Ereck Flowers looks good. Oh, yeah, he's been boxing this offseason. Yeah, he looks like he's in better shape, quick feet. They did the opposite.
They didn't do anything. They just sat there and they fed into the blind hope. And this is where the stubbornness comes in. But it's just confusing to me because the stubbornness I understand with Ereck Flowers because he's a number 9 pick and you just don't want to give up that early. And like I said, that's a whole different discussion. But there's not that much invested in Bobby Hart or John Jerry. Well, there wasn't, but then you gave John Jerry that horrible contract. But it's like there was no – I have a hard time believing that there was nobody out there that they could bring in to – I mean – just to name some guys that got low deals, right? Andre Smith, he was a struggling guard, again, an average guard. They didn't get him. Jahari Evans, who's having a pretty good year in Green Bay right now. I mean, the list goes on.
Bro, they had John Greco in the building like a week ago and didn't sign him.
Yeah, I mean, you just go down the list. I mean, I just have this list open of free agent offensive linemen who got signed, and I'm just looking at the contracts. And just thinking there was nobody, none of these guys were good enough to come in and challenge no one. I just find it hard to believe. I find it really hard to believe that, you know, we couldn't bring in a competition. Forget about a full-blown starter. Competition for none of these guys. And we just handed them the job. It's going to bite them in their ass. I'm telling you.
It already did. It's only going to get worse.
It is only going to get worse because John Jerry now, we're talking about this. John Jerry is probably facing father time where he's just getting old. He's 31 years old and he was already an average guard at best, but now he's getting older and he's getting worse.
And he's got that money now.
And it's a contract they can get out of, but I know I get what you're saying. You basically gave him this weird contract that doesn't make any sense to me.
Transitioning slightly.
Yes.
You talk father time. Eli Manning did not look good.
Oh, no, he did not.
He did not look good. Now, again, I'll say this. It's like a revolving door of incompetence. It's playing the blame game, and it perfectly falls on each party, and we can just go around and around for hours, honestly, if we wanted to. Jerry Reese.
Yeah.
Doesn't improve the offensive line.
And it's strange to me because, see, Eli, it's just been a whole strange, this whole offensive line thing has just been so odd to me because Eli Manning is 36 years old, right? And even when Eli Manning was 26, he wasn't this, you know, mobile quarterback.
Exactly. You're putting the words in my mouth right now. This is exactly where I'm going.
It wasn't that where it's like, oh, maybe, you know, he can still do that if he really, you know, works at it. No, he was never that. He was a guy that needed a good pocket consistently, at times could, you know, with his good footwork could create, you know, a little pocket for himself and make the right throw. But he's 36. I talked about this with you throughout the whole offseason. I said they needed to build a running game for him. And in order to build a running game, they would need to improve the offensive line. They didn't do that at all, and they didn't really improve the running game for him at all where they can take the ball out of his hands and they don't have to have him throw the ball 30, 40 times a game, dropping back 30, 40 times a game and taking hits.
Well, that's the thing. It's cyclical, right? You know, and I'll get back to my point in a second, but you're saying like they need a running game. Yeah. And you can open up the running game by using the passing game. by taking these shots downfield and keeping the defense honest instead of running these three-yard slants to Evan Engram where the linebacker can just stay within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. It makes no sense. Now, Jerry Reese, he goes out there and does nothing, doesn't improve the offensive line. Then you have Ben McAdoo, who cannot for the life of him scheme around this one deficiency, the offensive line. Then you get to the quarterback, Eli Manning, aging, 36 years old, has been an Iron Man his entire life, but I'm not going to say, I was about to say something real mean. Watching him try to run or do anything athletic really is comical. So essentially, what Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo are doing right now is taking, and again, it goes back to playing the strengths. You got to play the strengths of your team. You got to scheme around it. Eli Manning's not mobile. He's not going to be able to run for his life 16 games a year. So, yes, when he finally is able to step up into a relatively clean pocket, because it's never clean, a relatively clean pocket, and he misses Sterling Shepard in stride, he misses a wide-open Brandon Marshall, he looks bad. How much of that is him not feeling comfortable with the offensive line? Now, you look around the league, and I go back again to the Vikings, Sam Bradford, way more athletic than Eli is, way more mobile in the pocket, better with his feet at this point in his career. These guys can make those throws. We saw it start to happen last year. If you're not that confident that your quarterback is going to be able to make these throws without a clean pocket, it makes no sense to keep the same exact offensive line as last year. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I have no clue what Jerry Reese was expecting this year. So yes, Eli Manning looked very bad. He missed some open throws. But if your aging, non-mobile quarterback needs time in the pocket, you got to at least try to give him time in the pocket.
It just really makes you wonder. I mean, listen,
we're two podcasters, right? I've never played a down of football in my life. Like, are we crazy? Are we missing something here? Is Ben McAdoo the actual genius, or is he the idiot in the room?
You just don't know what's going on. And, you know, we're sitting here, and I'm just looking at – you look at some of these guards and what they got paid, okay? And I can tell you right off the bat, Chance Walmack got a one-year deal with Philadelphia for $1.5 million, better than John Jerry. Don Barclay was a right tackle and a guard, got $1 million, a one-year deal. I mean, I can spend 30 minutes just going over this with you. It doesn't make any sense to me. I for the life of me, don't understand this at all.
Yeah.
And you look at you look at Eli Manning, 36, taking hits. It's not. They need to find, and we'll talk about how they can fix it. But they need to figure out a way to fix it, or else this is going to spiral out of control, and it could lead to major repercussions for the general manager, the head coach, and the quarterback for other reasons. So not good. And I know people will say, well, it's just one. It's not one game. This has been going on for
more than a season.
Yes, this happened all last year. And I'm thinking to my – I thought before I got on the air with you, I was thinking to myself, when was the last time I watched the Giants – and I said to myself, you know what? That was a good offensive performance.
It's been years.
And one game came to mind. One game. They didn't score over 30, but I was like, you know what? That was a pretty good offensive performance. It was the week 8 game at home against Philly. They put up 28. But even during that game, there was a long stretch of time where they just didn't move the ball. And every time the Giants sort of had that scored over 20, there's always that time frame where they go a long period of time without moving the ball at all.
Yeah.
Not getting a first down, just punt. And listen, panic mode is about a 15 out of 10 right now for this team. And there's a lot of pressure on people inside that building.
I had a similar thought before we move on from this dumpster fire. You said the last time the offense was dominant. When was the last time? And listen, maybe I'm leaving something out here. Maybe it happened once or twice last season. When was the last time you were watching a Giants game and Eli Manning stepped up and made some incredible player and some incredible throw where you were like, wow, that's a two-time Super Bowl MVP? It's been a while.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I have to think. I mean,
The one that comes to mind is the Donnell touchdown in the back of the end zone, I believe against San Francisco. And even then, it was a really good job by Donnell to get both feet down. Maybe Odell against Green Bay had a similar catch. But, I mean, those miracle plays are those dimes are few and far between for an aging Eli.
Yeah, I mean, I'm if you give me a second, let me think. Nothing comes to mind. Listen, he's 36. He ain't getting better.
Yep.
And he's still capable. Listen, I think we both agree he's still capable of leading this team to a Super Bowl.
I'm not. I got people in my mentions saying, should we consider Geno Smith? No.
No. He's still a capable quarterback. But you got to protect him. You know, he's not a mobile guy.
Right.
Is his confidence rattled? I mean, I don't know. But you can see he's missed throws. He's missed wide open guys. Is it lack of confidence in the offensive line? Maybe. Is it just part of this whole process of him declining? Maybe. But I still believe in him. I think the Giants, I'm pretty sure the Giants still believe in him. But we're at the point now where you have to start talking about whether the decline is happening or not.
Yep. Especially with an upcoming draft that is going to have a good amount of talent at the quarterback position. But listen, we're in week one. We're not talking about that right now.
It's also going to have a good amount of talent on the offensive line as
well.
That's
true.
If the Giants want to actually rebuild their offensive line, which seems to be a big question mark nowadays, because they seem to think that continuity is so important, right?
I mean, yep.
They've had so many snaps. That's one thing our juries, they have had snaps together. Well, yeah, those haven't been good snaps. It doesn't mean that automatically, just because the guy gets 100, 200 snaps, 300 snaps, doesn't mean that he's going to the next 100 snaps are going to be better than it's. Listen, there's a lot of credit that needs to be given to Jerry for certain things, but this falls at his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it falls at Ben McAdoo's feet as well, because I think both of them came together and came to the conclusion that, you know what, I think we can go with what we have.
Yep.
Now, who would get fired if the season derailed? I tend to lean more toward the GM, even though it's something the Giants have never done.
Yep.
But I think it could be the GM on his way out.
Well, then, okay, well, let me play devil's advocate here. If it's the GM on the way out, why would a new GM come in here and say, wow, look at this offense, I want to keep this head coach?
Well, no. I'm not saying that if Jerry goes, McAdoo won't go. I'm saying the first guy out would be
Jerry.
Jerry, and then whoever replaces him
would
then make that decision.
Okay. Yeah. Next up on the rundown, you had ways to fix the offensive line.
Yeah. Can we say one thing right now? They're not training for Joe Thomas.
Can I say something else right now? Because this another question. We've gotten this 3 or 4 times. This question has come into my DMs. I'm going to lose my fucking mind. And it's all because that window licker, Skip Bayless, tweeted, it's like he got drunk and started playing Mad Libs on Twitter and tweeted something about the Giants and Adrian Peterson. We are not trading for Adrian Peterson. He's old, he's washed up, and no one is running behind this offensive line. Not even Prime AP.
I'll take you one step further.
Good Lord.
They're not signing Adrian Peterson even if he became a free agent.
Cool, jeez. Okay, back to the offensive line. You said they're not trading for Joe Thomas. That's 100% correct.
They're not. And there's no reason the Browns would do that.
Correct, especially with a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, they're not doing that. So let's just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
Joe Staley. I don't think they're trading for Joe Staley either. But I think
I'd like to see him try.
Here's the thing. I think it's more realistic that Joe Staley could come on the trading block than Joe Thomas, because San Francisco seems to be in this mindset of, well, we don't have a quarterback on the roster.
Exactly.
In the future, and we could use draft picks. What it would cost Joe Thomas?
Joe Staley.
Joe Staley, I'm sorry. What it would cost Joe Staley? For Joe Staley, I think would be, you know, looking at his contract, I think the Giants would have to ask San Francisco to eat some of that contract and probably have to give up either a first or second round pick.
I don't think so. I don't think it would be that high.
Listen, that's the asking price for these guys.
The asking price for Joe Thomas was like a second in the offseason. I think that they could get Staley for a third.
I don't think so. And have, because you have to look at his contract. He's still, his cap hit is pretty high. The Giants only have $10 million in cap space. He's got a cap hit of $11 million right now. So if they were to trade for Joe Thomas, they would need to make a corresponding roster move to go back under the cap.
Yep.
So, and how they would make that work is they could either give up a player or they could try to have San Francisco eat some of that cap space. And if San Francisco eats that cap space, then you're going to have to give up a higher pick.
That's fine. I just don't think it would be a first. There's no way it would be a first.
Well, listen, if he does get traded, I bet you it's nothing short of a second or a first.
You want to bet on that?
I can get. First of all, he's not getting traded.
Okay, but if.
If I, it's a first or a second.
All I'm right. Telling, you'll buy me a drink when I come to DC.
Yeah, yes. Adequate offensive tackles don't get traded because there's such an O-line crisis right now that teams are not giving up on adequate tackles, let alone Joe Staley, who's pretty damn good even at 33.
All right, moving on though.
All right. Other ways to fix it.
Are you asking me?
Oh, no, that's what we're going to talk about. Other ways to fix it. Realistically, you could scope the waiver wire. You could scope the free agent market and see if you can somehow get something, a guard or something, someone that could come in there and sort of be adequate. But quite frankly, I think the time to fix it was from externally was the offseason. Those days are done. You can try. You can shuffle it. You can try to bring in Fluker. You can try to bring in Wheeler. You could try to bring in Brett Jones for John Jerry. Hell, you could even try to say, you know what? Let me try Weston Richburg at guard and put Brett Jones at center.
Oh,
you
God.
Could try. I mean, there's just so many different things that you could try, but it doesn't mean that it's going to work. Now, the more realistic solution I think that they could do is probably bench John Jerry for Brett Jones. Or you could try to put Chad Wheeler at right tackle for Bobby Hart, and that's something they might have to do if Bobby Hart misses Monday night's game due to the ankle injury. But there isn't much that they can do.
Let me say this.
Okay.
This offensive line is not going to get any better throughout the course of this season. I'm talking with this personnel, with new personnel. There's no reinforcements coming. The fact that the starters are who they are essentially means that pretty much everyone else on the roster is worse. A lot of people are saying, let's shake it up. Let's throw Pugh at right tackle. Let's throw Fluker at guard. Let's do this. Let's do that. These guys aren't even good at the natural position. What makes you think that they're going to be better playing out of position? Next to guys who they don't normally play next to. This line is they are who we thought they were. They're terrible. They're here to stay. And I'll tell you what, you brought up Bobby Hart, who we might have to put Chad Wheeler at right tackle. If one of these guys goes down, it only gets worse. It only gets worse.
Especially if it's one of the two good linemen, whether it's Richburg or Pugh.
Knock on wood. It only gets worse. You know, if there's an injury, seriously, guys, I'm not very religious. Say a prayer for Eli. I'm dead serious. This man is 36-year-old Eli is not going to survive this season. He's not. He still has the Eagles twice, the Redskins twice, the NFC West. It's going to be a bloodbath. It's going to be an absolute bloodbath. If the Giants end up averaging over 3.5 yards per carry on the season in total for their running game, I would say it's a success. They're in for a rude awakening, a bad treat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that there's any way to fix this.
I think if Bobby Hart misses Monday night's game and Chad Wheeler goes in, there could be a chance that Chad Wheeler impresses enough to earn himself another start, per se. But how good does he need to be to beat out Bobby Hart? And would they even make that trade? Because they've seemed so reluctant to add any sort of competition to Bobby Hart throughout the whole offseason. I mean,
well, it's because he's the best right tackle in the league. I don't know if you heard.
See that. I don't get that. I don't know why. I think, listen, as a player, no, in all honesty, I think as a player, as any,
you got to have confidence in yourself, but you got to be realistic.
The best, but you don't go out and say in public. You don't go out and say something like that, and then go out and have a game like that. It's bad.
All right. And also one thing, and I don't want to dwell on this for much longer because I want to talk about the defense for a few minutes and then get to some questions. Odell's agent, biggest winner of Sunday night.
Ooh.
Oh, my goodness.
Whatever. Hopefully from Sunday, people won't get mad when Odell Beckham Jr. holds out next offseason for a contract.
Yo, if I'm Odell, I walk into Jerry's office, I plop my balls on the table, and I say, pay me.
If I'm Odell, honestly, if I'm Odell right now, if he won't do this.
I know what you're going to say.
I would hold out right now.
Yep.
So, why would I play?
Milk that high ankle sprain, baby.
Yeah, no, why would I play? Why would I play for under $1 million when I see this team can't function without me? Why would I play?
Yep.
I don't think his teammates. I mean, I don't want to speak for them, but I would do it right now. I'd say, hey, and it's not like they don't have the cap space. They could assign me to an extension right now.
Yep.
And still be able to manage. So it's not like the Rams, there in Donald, where they just don't have the cap space. I mean, they're under like $1 million in cap space. It's impossible to do it.
Yep.
They have $10 million in cap space. They have some flexibility there where they could extend them right now. If I'm Odell, I give him the deuces and I say, talk to my agent.
Yep. Anything you want to talk about in regards to the defense? The only thing I think I really have is B.J. Goodson.
Man, I think the Giants finally found a three-down linebacker.
Antonio Pierce 2.0.
Hey, man, he is really good. I really enjoyed watching him. He had 18 tackles.
14 solo.
He had a great screen breakup. Listen, I love the Giants defense. I feel so bad for them. I thought they played a great game on Sunday night. They did everything they could. A bogus PI call gave the Cowboys 7 points. There were some talks about Eli Apple. I thought the ankle injury is still bothering him. He was slow a bit.
He was bad.
He was, yeah. He was bad. The touchdown that he gave up to Witten seemed to be sort of his fault and Casillas' fault. But are you really worried about Eli Apple? I wouldn't say I'm worried about him.
I don't want to say I'm worried about him. I just don't think that – listen, I wasn't like a huge fan of the pick when it happened. I don't think he's going to be some star. I think he can be like a serviceable third cornerback, and maybe that's just me being spoiled because I get to watch DRC and Janoris Jenkins every week. But, I mean, his performance – and I'm trying to pull up the stats. His performance on Sunday night was – It was bad. It was real bad.
I still think the ankle is bothering him. I don't want to make an excuse for him, but I still think he can be a good corner in this league. It's a tough position to transition to, and I think he'll be all right. This defense will be all right. Landon Collins, still an absolute monster.
Yep. Oh my goodness. Darian Thompson almost had himself a pick. I'm excited for Darian.
Darian Thompson got through the game. Good for him. The defensive line, JPP, Olivier Vernon. I'm still a little bit worried on third downs. They couldn't get off the field. But when you're on the field for so damn long,
yeah,
it takes its toll, especially when you're going up against that offense. But I walked out of that game. When we talk about that next step with the defense,
yep.
I think with the emergence of B.J. Goodson and having a true free safety ball hawk and Darian Thompson back there, they can take a next step and they can be really good.
Yep.
And that's the thing, though. That's the thing that frustrates me is because throughout that whole game, it was a two-possession game. And because the offense was so inept, you just was so hopeless, but the defense kept them in the game. They kept them in the game.
And they held them to one touchdown.
19 points.
You should be able to win.
If I were to tell you the Giants were going to hold Dallas 19 points and one touchdown, you and I both would have said they were going to win that game.
Absolutely. Let's go to some questions. You go ahead, pull up the page. I've got it up already, so we can sort of alternate. We'll do a few. Odds of anything changing on the offensive line for week two? I'd say zero unless Bobby Hart can't play.
Right. I'll agree with that.
All right. You got one?
Yes. Let me look down the board. Do you think Ben McAdoo will ever stop being stubborn? I like him, but his my way is always the best way approach is hurting the team. That's from NYYFan2442.
I mean, why? We haven't seen him change at all.
Nope.
Until something, the only thing that we saw change, in my opinion, didn't change enough, was that he used less 11 personnel in game one than he did last season. I think it was like 72%. Still didn't use enough 22. Still didn't use enough 12 for my liking.
Yeah, there's still a lot of.
This is a good one from Jake. Why, out of all the quarterbacks I watched this past weekend with good and bad O-lines, why did Eli look the most terrified in the pocket? I mean, listen, he is 36. He's never been mobile, and he clearly doesn't trust his guys. I mean, I think that's what it boils down to. I mean, it's like maybe an oversimplification. He didn't play well even when he wasn't pressured, but if you're asking why he looks uncomfortable, it's because his bookends are Ereck Flowers and Bobby Hart.
Yeah, I think, listen, we talked about blame. There's enough blame to go around to just about everyone, including Eli. He's got to play better. He's got to be able to make some plays. But listen, age and the fact that he's just not mobile enough is not a good formula, especially when you're dealing with the deficiencies on the offensive line that the Giants have.
Yep.
I got one for you. Will the Giants not score 30-plus points in a game again this year?
No, they won't. The only way they do is if they get a touchdown from the defense or special teams.
So they're not going to score over 30 points this season again?
Correct.
Man. I'm going to say they do.
Okay.
I'm going to say they do.
Blind hope.
It is blind hope. I know, and I might be falling into it, but they just have a lot of weapons on offense. And I know the offensive line is just so bad, but I think they will get a team on a Sunday where they'll be able to score 30 points. Maybe a touchdown will come on special teams, but they will score over 30 points this season.
From DJ Krause, why was the running game so terrible other than the offensive line? I mean, they brought in Ellison and kept Smith to bolster it, and it looked worse. Let me just talk about pass protection for a second, because I believe, again, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't have the stat in front of me, that the Giants and Ben McAdoo specifically left all five offensive linemen on an island with the exception of like four snaps.
Yeah.
So Ellison and Smith not doing a whole lot of blocking in the passing game. I mean, listen, it's predictable. You said it earlier. Shane Vereen is out there for 31 snaps. They passed all 31 of them. You got Paul Perkins and Orleans Darkwa in there. You know, you're going to be able to defend the run way better. So there's going to be a problem. I honestly thought that Ellison and Smith – listen, seasons early, I thought Ellison and Smith would be big assets to the run game. Let's see Monday night.
I got one more for you. And your favorite of this, I don't know if you wanted to ask it, but – is it stubbornness or lack of ability to properly do their job the reason JR and TC, I'm assuming that's Tom Coughlin slash Ben McAdoo, BM is probably Ben McAdoo, haven't fixed the offensive line in the last 3-4 years? This is from at just a Giants fan.
So, all right, well, so just read the first part one more time.
Is it stubbornness or lack of ability to properly do their job the reason Jerry Reese and
Tom Coughlin/
Ben McAdoo haven't fixed the offensive line in the last 3-4 years?
That's a tough one. I mean, stubbornness is the easy answer.
Here's what I think it is. You ready for it?
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit of everything. Because stubbornness would mean they really didn't address it. They did try to address it. They have two first round picks in Justin Pugh and Ereck Flowers on the offensive line. They have a second round pick in Weston Richburg. And then they got John Jerry and Bobby Hart. Now, the last 3-4 years, they've gone out and they've spent money on the offensive line. They brought in Jeff Schwartz. Didn't work out. So I'm going to say it's a little bit of lack of ability to properly do their job. Ereck Flowers, number 9 overall.
Sure.
It is stubbornness.
Ben McAdoo's part.
Oh, no, stubbornness on everyone's part.
Okay.
We'll put this on Ben McAdoo, but stubbornness on Jerry's and Ben McAdoo's not bringing any competition to compete with some of these offensive linemen that they drafted. And the third, I'll say, is they just haven't been lucky, injuries. The Jeff Schwartz, I thought, was a good signing, but, you know, his career kind of spiraled because of injuries.
Yep.
So I'm going to say it's a little bit of three. I'm not going to completely say it's stubbornness. I'm not going to completely say it's they haven't done their job properly because, you know, Justin Pugh is a good guard and, you know, Weston Richburg is a good center, although he has struggled for the last year.
Okay. Before we wrap up, you got any final topics for us?
No.
No, no. Wow. You know it's a dark day when Weiss doesn't have anything to chat about to end the episode, when it's just bad offense and bad offensive line and Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo. Really ruined your week, huh?
Oh, man, it killed me.
All right. Well.
Monday night.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk. We're caught up in last week. We didn't even talk about next week.
Monday night, where they're going up against the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
1-0, Matthew Stafford, highest paid player in NFL history. Started out slow against the Arizona. I think he threw a pick six on his first pass.
Yep.
Finished the game strong. Must win?
Yeah, must win. I think like 95% of teams that start 0-2 don't make the playoffs or something like that. Yep. Is that correct?
It's something like that, but yeah. It's highly unlikely that a team that make the playoffs is 0-2. I'm going to say it's a must win simply because let's look at their schedule. At the Eagles, at the Bucks, Chargers, at the Broncos, Seattle.
Yeah.
If you go 0-2, there's a good shot this thing spirals out of control. And, man, if you thought Sunday night was bad, whoo, just get ready. If this team starts 0-2, forget about it. Sort of honoring that 2007 Giant team.
Yep.
There's going to be a lot of emotion in the stadium, a lot of happy people at halftime and prime time, must win. They better win. They better win. It is a must win for them. Do they
win? I think they do. I think back to last year where I think I was like the only one who was really confident in how I perceived the Lions, in that they were being overrated. You know, Matt Stafford had a lot of fourth quarter. It was Eli-esque what Matt Stafford did last season, as well as in his first game this season. He's basically taken the crown of king of the fourth quarter. I don't know. I really think the Giants eke it out. The offense can't get worse. It literally can't. 3 points. They got to do better than that.
They won't win if Odell Beckham Jr. doesn't play.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree with you there.
They won't win.
He needs to play.
They'll lose the same exact way.
Yep. Maybe score like one more field goal, but other than that, it's going to be bad.
If they play, he wins.
Agreed.
But it just sucks because there's just going to be so much pressure on him. And if they fail, everyone's going to point the finger at him, even though it's not going to be his fault.
Yep.
But there's just so much pressure on him right now. And dealing with this injury, you know, I hope he's 100%. I hope he doesn't get hurt more than he's already been hurt. But I'm with you. I think they win if he plays. I think the defense shows out again. And I think the offense plays better than what they did.
Again, it's hard to play worse.
It's hard to play worse, yes.
All right. I think that's it for us. Episode 36 in the books. Thank you guys for tuning in. Pray for a better result next week, Monday night. Subscribe. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. Follow me on Twitter at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. hopefully when we speak to you guys next week, we'll be in a better mood. Peace.
Yes, sir. Peace.